Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. We live at kdrt.org online. I'm Bill Buchanan, and I thank you for tuning in today. Well, Jeff Hudson is part of a quickly changing profession, that is to say, a reporter for a small town newspaper or news organization, if you like. For more than 22 years, he has written about schools for the Davis Enterprise. Although he recently turned 65, and so now he's retiring. You might also know him for the theater reviews he's done for Capital Public Radio, and he started there in 1995, or for reviews he's written for the Sacramento News and Review. He's done a variety of jobs in this area, and we're going to talk about all that today. Jeff, thank you for your return visit to Davisville.
My pleasure to be here, Bill.
You know, I think this is your fourth time on the show. I started doing this about 12 years ago, and we've had you in before to talk about schools and housing and various other things you've covered over the years. You recently got your first COVID pandemic vaccine shot on your 65th birthday.
First day of eligibility.
Well, that's right. That's right, by age. And, you know, I thought it's a very 2021 kind of a birthday present. You know, are you feeling celebrated?
It's an interesting sensation. When I started at the Watsonville paper back in the early 1980s, I was working alongside several veteran journalists who were in their 60s or 70s. And now here I am in my mid 60s and I'm working with some young reporters and I'm kind of, the shoe is on the other foot now. So,
yes, that's the, it sounds like a cliche, but the march of time. You have a career long enough and this will happen to you. I do want to ask, about the pandemic a little bit, at least start by talking about that, because it's, you know, it's had a huge and terrifically distorting effect on schools, remote learning, and a lot of canceled events, canceled sports. A lot of students, families, teachers have struggled with it. You've covered it all this year, right up to the point where you retired. And what's been the biggest effect that you've seen on in Davis schools from the pandemic?
It's just changing all kinds of things, and the people are really going to realize just how much has changed when kids actually go back into the classrooms, because there's going to be a lot of things that are different than the way that it was before the pandemic. There's going to be all kinds of hand washing stations. There's going to be about half the number of desks in the classroom. And so the class of 25 or 30 kids is going to be broken into two smaller cohorts who will take turns using the classroom that now has the seating capacity about half of what it was, so that there's more airspace between the desks for safety and, you know, hold down the virus transmission. There's all kinds of, there'll be someone at the curb taking people's temperatures as they arrive for school. Just a lot of little changes like that all throughout the day. And you're gonna have face masks on, which they never did before the pandemic. So it's just going to have a very different feeling. People who think it's going to be just like everything's going to normalize, that's probably not a totally accurate assumption.
Now, you're describing what will be true for the initial return, right?
Right.
I think the school district has talked about hybrid classes in April, and at least at the time that we're talking, I'm not entirely clear what that means.
What it means is that if you have a class of 30 kids and you can only fit 15 into your classroom because they've thinned out the number of desks for safety's sake, there will be days when one cohort of kids will be in the classroom and the other will be studying online, and then they'll flip back. And it's going to mean a lot of extra work for teachers, I can tell you that.
Well, I've thought about that, actually. Difficult to teach online, I would think, and difficult to teach online and in person at more or less the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not entirely sure how it's actually going to work, but I know they spent most of the summer at the district office figuring out how they would make the transition back when the time came. And they also, you know, when the pandemic began in March a year ago, they weren't really prepared. Nobody saw it coming and nobody had really thought about being away for a whole year. And so they kind of felt their way into the transition, you know, live. It wasn't something that they had the opportunity to really plan for. And then over the summer, they retooled what they had learned about how to teach kids in that setting, so that when it started again in the fall, they'd made a number of changes that most parents felt improved the situation. So yeah. It's sort of still a work in progress.
Yeah, it's... And of course, I guess come this fall, when you say summer, you're talking about summer of 2020.
Right.
And they were planning. And of course, now we're not too far from summer 2021.
That's right.
And then the fall, and at some point in there, I imagine these extraordinary measures will fall away. There will be the vaccines for the kids, and you know, we'll get a better understanding, hopefully a very low incidence of COVID, and then things will more or less return. Do you think there'll be lasting effects? We talk about how hard it is for teachers, but there's a real sense that, you know, students just probably overall haven't learned what they needed to learn in that year of online learning.
There are things that were doubtless lost along the way. There are some kids who like learning online better. I understand some of the kids who have, you know, sort of borderline autism type spectrum issues like studying at home with fewer distractions. And so I've heard of, you know, there are some who like it and some who don't. And, you know, the people who are in the orchestra obviously aren't happy because they haven't been able to work together. The kids who are on the team sports, there's an obvious, you know, haven't been able to do that. So there's a lot of things that have to do with the usual school experience that have either stopped for a while or changed quite a bit. And some of those things aren't going to go entirely back to the way they were before, like I said.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out exactly how that plays out as 2021-22 goes along. You know, one of the questions I had about it, and you kind of alluded to this a minute ago, you talked about how the district sort of had to feel its way back into reopening. Some districts reopened sooner than Davis. Mm-hmm. Some are going to reopen later than Davis
right.
is.
Right.
Do you have a sense of why Davis chose this time? Why now? Why not a few months ago?
A number of the districts that reopened early ended up going back onto distance learning because they hadn't really planned it out, and they had to kind of retreat and retrench a little bit. And so Davis kind of wanted to really work it out so that they were trying very hard to do it right the first time. Okay. And to some extent, they looked at other districts that were making the transition. You know, some districts were in places where, for a variety of reasons, the virus hadn't become quite as big of an issue. With Davis, as you know, there's a lot of university students who go back and forth to the Bay Area all the time. And there was some concern that we would be subject to lots of interesting new virus-related issues, and that has indeed proven to be the case, which is why the whole Healthy Davis Together testing and vaccination now program is underway. And that's where I got my vaccine, by the way, on my birthday was at Healthy Davis Together.
Well, I said, although the Davis rate's been pretty low, I mean, we've been pretty fortunate in town, partly for that reason, but I think infection rate is low and seems pretty controlled, relatively.
Well, and the school district has made a deal with Healthy Davis Together, and Healthy Davis Together will be visiting school sites and doing daily. Now, I don't know how often they're going to be doing the spit test, but there will be tests at the schools, both for the teachers and staff and for the students. And that'll be ongoing.
One of the other themes that you've written about from time to time over the years on schools has to do with finances. And by the way, we should make clear that the Davis Enterprise has a new schools reporter. Glad to see that they're not letting that position go vacant. And that is Edward Booth.
Right. He is a Davis High grad. He went to Berkeley and got a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. He's been working part-time at the Winter's Express, and he was also doing some work for a newspaper in Richmond covering the West Contra Costa School District. So he's been covering school boards for a little while now.
Well, and one of the articles he wrote recently, and this was in the Enterprise of, March 7th, Davis Schools Brace for Looming Enrollment Drop.
Right.
And this has to do with the fact that, well, partly it's demographics, the birth rate is down, and the number of K-12 age students in Davis is dropping. Mm-hmm. There were some students as well who left the district during the pandemic for private school enrollment, perhaps where the schools were open.
And some homeschool enrollment too. Opted for that.
But you've made the point that financially there's a reckoning coming. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the birth rate has been going down, and the number of incoming kindergartners every fall has been going down pretty steadily over almost the whole 22 years I've been covering the school board for the Enterprise. There used to be, close to 600 new kindergartners every fall. And the new enrollment projections based on a steadily declining birth rate indicate that about 5 years from now, there will be fewer than 400. It'll be in the 390s somewhere if the projections pan out. So that's a decline of about 200 kids a year over time. Yeah. And then there are also, there were about 300 students who went for some other option because of the pandemic, and probably not all of them are coming back. Some of them will come back, but some won't. But if you take a 200 student cut plus however many of the students don't come back, you know, 400 students is a elementary school. So if you're down by a total of 400 kids, you know, the problem is, as people in the education trade like to remind you, the students don't come in neat little bundles. So if you lose 200 or 300 kids or something like that due to the usual factors, they don't all leave from one place. There's a few here and a few there. And so it's very difficult sometimes to make the staffing adjustments.
Or the number of schools. I mean, that's come up from time to time in Davis, and it strikes
right.
me a pretty hard conversation, but that at some point, if your enrollment drops, the question is, do you need as many schools as you have?
Right. And the issue is, you get into it, the Davis district has a program with a fair number of bells and whistles, electives, music programs, science programs, robotics, all the things that you know about. And if you're going to maintain that kind of academic program, you have to be filling the seats in those schools. If you want a theater comparison, there was a very popular show a few decades ago called Phantom of the Opera that had a big special effect, a chandelier that came down in the middle of the show. That show had to play to fairly full houses. And what finally closed Phantom of the Opera in San Francisco was the drop in Japanese tourism following the 9/11 incident, because the Japanese tourists stopped traveling to America. The percentage of the theater seats that were being filled at Phantom of the Opera by Japanese tourists went away, and suddenly the show wasn't making money anymore, so they had to close it. There's a little bit of that in the Davis School District. If you're going to have all those nice science electives and stuff, you've got to fill the seats. And so what the school district has been doing is, if there's a UC Davis faculty member who maybe lives in Woodland but wants to have their kindergartner studying closer to the university, they've brought in a lot of these students who maybe the house where they live is in Woodland, but parents qualify for the Davis district under what's called residence by employment, where you're working in the district, and sometimes it's both parents working in the district. So they've taken some of those kids, and this is under state law. You know, if you have space, you need to take those kids under state law. So the number of out-of-district kids is right now, it's around around almost 1,000 kids, somewhere in that vicinity. You're looking at a district that has maybe 8,500 students, if you're counting everybody. So it's a significant portion of the school district's enrollment is coming in on those transfers.
12%, I think, if I was doing the number right.
I think you're about right. Plus, that also includes some Da Vinci kids who, as a charter school, Da Vinci does not need to get a charter agreement with the other district. Da Vinci can just accept them. If it's for the regular academic program at an elementary school, Da Vinci doesn't have any elementary students, then you would have to go through a transfer process to get your kid into an elementary school in Davis.
You know, there was something you said there I hadn't understood before, and I want to make sure I heard it correctly. If someone, say, lives in Woodland or Dixon or whatever, but right. they work at UC Davis and they want their child to attend schools in Davis, did I understand correctly that the Davis School District is obligated to take that child if the family wants to, if they have room?
There have always been some students like this. Very often, like when my kids were students at Birch Lane back in the late 90s, there were several people who taught at the school who had school-age kids who brought their kids to Birch Lane. That has kind of grown now to include people who might have a job at the university or city government or things like that, not just people who are working for the school district.
We are talking with Jeff Hudson, who is a lifelong journalist, radio and newspaper, primarily known in Davis, I suppose, for writing about Davis schools for the Davis Enterprise from 1998 until he recently retired. I am Bill Buchanan, and this is Davis Phil on KDRT.
If I can pick up one more point I'd like to make, Bill.
Yes.
Some people who find out about the number of transfer students say those kids aren't our responsibility. We shouldn't be educating them, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is that the state law says if you have the space, those people qualify under residence by employment. So, you know, the parents have a case to have their kid make the move. Plus, if you didn't have those out of district students, you'd for sure be looking at closing a school. And then the question becomes, which school are you going to close? And of course, every neighborhood will say, you can't close our school. You've got to close a school on the other side of town somewhere. And so, you know, closing a school, as the Davis District found out some years ago when they closed Valley Oak, is a very unpopular proposition. And so the district has basically continued to take a growing number of out-of-district students in order to keep this academic program that everybody likes and nobody wants to see cut back.
Yeah. It's occurred to me that Davis, almost without intending to perhaps, has almost become a magnet school district.
Yes, very much so.
Kind of a charter district, even, not in the legal sense, but in that mm-hmm. sense of, you know, family says, well, I want to be able to choose where to send my kid.
Right.
And well, if you have a connection to Davis, you can send them to Davis.
Right.
But, you know, the main case where I hear people bring up the idea of kids from out of town is when it comes to the tax system in Davis, because,
right,
of course, Davis voters have voted to tax ourselves many times. But if you don't live in the district, then you don't pay that tax. So
right.
That's where there is
currently, the district for a number of years has been sending a letter to the families urging them to voluntarily send a donation, I think, to the Davis Schools Foundation rather than the Yolo County Tax Assessor.
Does that work?
There are families that do it. They've also been working with some of the legislative aides for the people who represent Davis in the Assembly and in the State Senate. And they're looking to see if there's a way the Davis School District could actually more or less require out of district students to pay that. But it would require some modifications of state law before the school district could do that.
All righty. Well, I can tell that you've been covering schools for a while, just from the knowledge you have. You've covered schools for nearly a quarter century in Davis. What's changed over that time that strikes you as interesting?
The most obvious thing is kids use computers all day long, which, you know, when my kids started kindergarten, I think they were just in the process of setting up a computer lab and at Birch Lane. And in those days, each school decided what computers to buy. It was usually funded through the PTA, not by the school district itself. And along the way, you ended up with this patchwork of Apple equipment at this school and IBM type PC equipment at another school. And then the district realized that they really needed to have consistency. So they now have all these little notebook computers that they have and sent home with the kids during the pandemic. The kids that didn't have a computer at home, they actually sent one of the little computers home with students that needed that.
Oh, yeah. Well, this past year, I mean, online learning wouldn't be possible without some way to get online.
Right.
Let's talk about your theater reviews a little bit, too. You've done those for Capital Public Radio. Of course, theater hasn't been happening except in, you know, sort of limited, some of them kind of innovative, but obviously it's nothing like live theater in person.
Right, and so on. Right. Well, and to be honest with you, the Bay Area groups have been a little more active in terms of generating online things that you could post. The groups like Capital Stage just basically mothballed themselves. They cut down their staff to two people, furloughed everybody else, and they're going to come back when the pandemic ends, but they have not been doing, they did one online audio production. It was like a radio play. But they haven't been staging things. Music Circus has been completely shut down. Broadway Sacramento has been completely shut down. Sac Theater Company, it really hasn't been doing very much either. They've got a couple of little online things that they're starting to offer now. But the Bay Area groups, which have more funding and a larger subscription list in many cases, have been a little more creative in terms of doing that kind of thing.
B Street, you didn't mention. Are they also
Yeah, they're in the same boat as everybody else. And B Street has been doing basically comedy acts for their online stuff. They sort of function with one of their smaller rooms upstairs as a comedy club.
Are you going to keep doing theater reviews, or are you wrapping that up too?
I'm making up my mind. I'm crossing that as we come to it. At the moment, you know, I would still enjoy attending Davis Shakespeare productions when they do them and stuff like that. But I will confess that the nighttime, late nighttime drives back and forth across the causeway are starting to look like not so good an option for me. I have a longstanding issue with sleep apnea, and my doctor warned me for quite a long time, you know, you're never really going to get better with this until you get onto a consistent sleep schedule and you get to bed at around the same time every night and you're getting up at around the same time every morning. Well, it took a pandemic to make me do that, but gosh darn, my doctor was right. And so, you know, I'm probably not going to do as much of theater reviewing as I've done in the past, and I may just have to give it up altogether.
How about the News and Review? You used to work for them as well, but of course they've...
They're gone.
Yeah, well, I mean, they stopped, then they were online, they were publishing monthly for a while. I got to admit, I haven't tracked it.
No, we got a letter from the News and Reviews publisher that all the writers, for all intents and purposes, it's shut down at this point.
Did you get that letter? Is it recently or some months ago?
It was a couple of months ago.
So they're currently just online only.
Well, actually, that leads into my next question, which is to say local journalism is, you know, as you know, you've worked in this. It keeps getting scarcer. Local journalism, local reporting.
Right. You know,
opinions, speculation, spin, lies, even. Right. These seem plentiful. I wonder, you've worked in the field. Where do you think we're headed with this?
I'm a little bit worried about it, because what kept a institution like a daily newspaper in a town the size of Davis going was auto ads and real estate ads and that kind of stuff. Yeah, and then that's what paid reporters' salaries. I mean, the money you pay for the person who delivers the paper basically covers the person who delivers the paper, but that's not really covering the main operation.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, as individuals, you have to compensate somehow for this dwindling supply of reported news.
Right.
You know, that at least tries to be objective. And I say this having worked in the press. I don't pretend that the press is some paragon of excellence or something. It's like any human endeavor. It has its pluses and it has its weaknesses. But at least you've got people who, frankly, like you have done, you know, you're paid to go out and be a third party. You know, you've written about the schools. You write about theater, but you're not part of the theater. You're not part of the school district. And so that gives you some independence and some distance.
Right.
On top of that, you know, you've been a parent, you've had kids in the district. So you, and you know, Davis, but the point is you get paid for that. If someone's doing that just for fun or as a hobby, you don't get the work that's as probing. You don't get it as persistent. And so I'm not quite sure how the individual is going to compensate for that.
Yeah, it's gonna be difficult. You know, I mean, I look at young Edward Booth, who's covering the school board meetings now, and he's you know, trained to do it, wants to do it, but you know, are the finances of a news operation in a town the size of Davis gonna enable him to earn enough of a salary to keep it going? You know, time will tell. I don't know the answers to that particular question. The challenge too is just, you're still putting out a print edition for people of a certain age that just have to have the print edition. You're putting out an online edition. I can tell you that most of the people under the age of, I don't know, 50 something or 60 something read the online edition rather than the print edition. You know, the actuarial tables kind of tell you where that one's going to go.
Yeah. Well, and I think until the pandemic, I don't know about the Enterprise specifically, but the print editions were still producing a fair amount of revenue.
Yeah,
you know, they carried certain print ads and display ads, and then the pandemic, of course, you know, just has.
The advertising you see in the print edition is mostly legal ads and
a lot of retirement communities. I've seen
obituary. You know, obituaries are paid, so those are paid lineage.
We're getting near the end. I did want to ask if there are any particularly memorable stories from your career, and to preface this a bit. you know, journalists will ask each other these questions, and at large news organizations, typically the answer will be something like, you know, they covered a war or some big moment in history. Mm-hmm. Obviously, community journalism, the level where you've worked and the level where I've worked really all my life, the payoff is often more in the smaller thing. Anyway, anything stick out over your years?
The one of the favorite stories for me was the building and the opening of the Mondavi Center. I was involved with covering that. You know, I was there when they announced that they were starting a campaign to build a center for the arts. This was long before the Mondavi gift.
And this is at UC Davis. Yeah,
I was there when the shovels went into the ground for the ceremonial groundbreaking. I was there when they did the topping out ceremony and Barbara Jackson donated the $5 million gift. I was there when Mondavi was recognized, both Robert and Marguerite. And I went over to the winery in Napa and got to interview Robert there at the winery. And so there were a lot of great experiences with that. At the same time, the Palms Playhouse, which was, you know, small and scruffy and lovable, kind of quietly went away and then rematerialized in Winters for a number of years, but is now, I think it's sort of in a state of suspended animation. I'm not sure it's going to come back.
No, it is. At least as of last year, I talked with one of the owners and they had given up the lease on the Winters location at that time.
Right. And that to me was kind of symbolic of Davis of the 70s and Davis of the 2000s. You know, the changing passage of time, because you got this wonderful new venue, but this lovely little venue that everybody loved kind of stopped being there. So,
all right. And last question, what's next for you? Are you going to just enjoy your retirement? Are you going to keep writing? Got some projects?
You know, my wife is getting ready to retire as well, and we might do a little travel. There's been some talk about another trip to Japan, but we have to get beyond the point where the Japanese government would require you to spend 2 weeks in quarantine in a Tokyo hotel.
And you lived in Japan for a while, if I recall.
Yeah, we lived in Japan for a year, and I would love to go again and see some of our friends who are there, who are you know, moving into their 70s and 80s themselves. And you know, if we don't see them fairly soon, it's just not really going to be a possibility. And then, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to the Davis Public Library reopening someday. And one of the things I've done during the pandemic is I've started reading again, and I'm enjoying reading books again, which is something I haven't really been able to do for the last however many years because I was going to plays and school board meetings and concerts all the time.
All righty. Well, Jeff, thank you for everything. Thanks for your time today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
We've been talking with Jeff Hudson, recently retired from the Davis Enterprise, longtime local journalist, Capital Public Radio, News and Review, and a longtime resident of Davis. I'm Bill Buchanan, and this is KDRT on Davisville. Thank you all for listening.